Good morning, everybody, and happy Friday. Today is May 8th, and welcome to the Localization Fireside Chat podcast. I'm your host, Robin Ayoub, and today we are recording, I think, episode 214. So today's guest, we're going to be talking a little bit about web, which is dominated, the websites, which is dominated by English primarily. Over 50% of the online content is in English, yet only about 20% of the world actually speaks the language, and the gap is enormous, which presents an opportunity for businesses willing to show up in the language of their customer's choice, choice of language, that is. Actually, think of this as a dream in a lot of cases, because that's wide opportunity for people to take advantage of. My guest today has built her career exactly at that intersection. Christina Spalding, I guess you go by Zila, right? Am I correct?
No, I did a lot of work under the name Zila. Oh. And I didn't want to lose that. So when I got remarried, I kept Spalding.
All right. So Christina Spalding is the founder of Manzanita Marketing in Las Vegas, a based digital marketing agency specializing in international SEO and multilingual content with more than 20 years in-house experience at companies like TextBroker, IGT, Fluency. She has a fluency, and I found out like you have fluency in English and French Quebec. That's pretty you studied in French Quebec, I heard. And German. You lived in Germany as well. Mm-hmm. And 6 years actually living in Germany. She brings something rare to the space. Linguistic depth, real business muscle, both of them combined together to make a beautiful conversation we're going to have right now. So as we get started, Christina, first, welcome to the channel.
Thank you.
And as we get started with the conversation, Christina, allow me to ask the usual question that everybody gets on this channel. The story question. What is your story?
I started studying languages in second grade. I thought that my family had French heritage. We don't, but that's what I thought. So in second grade, we had the opportunity to learn Spanish or French. I chose French, studied it through high school. I was fortunate enough to have a high school that also offered German classes. So when I got to high school, my dad's like, hey, we actually are German, so you should take German. And I said, oh, I'm taking French, and back and forth. And it wound up being that I took French and German. And I was the only one in my school doing that. And I thought, that's cool. That's going to be my career since I'm the only one doing it. So I majored in French and German in college, interned in Germany directly after graduating, and stayed there for 6 years. I also studied abroad in Quebec City, as mentioned, and then also in Strasbourg in France. So I got exposed to everything except Parisian French.
For our Quebec listeners, it's a joke. Don't take it seriously.
But, you know, when you're listening to media, you get the standard French, just the same way you get standard German. And I started my career in import-export. Mm-hmm. That was my internship. And then after the internship, I actually went into localization and was a project manager for a year before getting laid off because the company I was with merged.
Which company was that?
So this was back in the late 90s, early 2000s. It was Lernout and Housby, and they merged into Mendez Language Services.
Oh, okay.
So.
And this when you got laid off?
That was my first layoff.
Okay. That was your first layoff. Yeah, because I hear you got laid off quite a bit of time.
Yeah. I had the misfortune of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. I was in Germany during a time of economic chaos. And then I came to Las Vegas in 2006, 2007. The Great Recession hit 2007, 2008.
Timing.
And then, you know, after that, it's just been, the market's been very tumultuous, the job market. And I think most people would agree that it's getting harder and harder to find a job. So last layoff in 2023, I decided I could either go apply for jobs and pitch myself for jobs, or I could start my agency. I already had a few clients on the side, so it was just a question of getting more. And if I'm going to be pitching myself anyway, I might as well pitch to small and medium-sized businesses instead of just the large ones.
Absolutely. Now, how did all this lead you to, you know, you went through the education, which is almost multilingual education, and you've worked in the language industry, and then you decided to have a career in international marketing. So take me to the point where you went, okay, I don't want to do this language thing. I just want to focus on the marketing aspect of it.
I was fortunate enough to help TextBroker, which is a German company. They're based out of Mainz. They started their office in the US and I was their first employee. And they wanted a German speaker because they're like, our English isn't good enough. I'm like, their English was good enough. They didn't feel it was good enough. And that's fine. It gave me an opportunity I was glad to grab a hold of. So I got to use the language with the employers and the founders, and then pretty much run the business. So it was a team of four, and then we grew to 12 and 16 and then 60. And being able to call the shots was really appealing. And having a strong team in Europe to bounce ideas off of was also really helpful. So that was kind of the catalyst to go full in on marketing, as opposed to full in on language, whether it would be teaching or translating or proofreading. There's a certain point where when you're in the actual language work, it's getting harder and harder to add value. And when you can add the marketing wrapper around the language work, you add a lot of value. And I think a lot of localization professionals, translation professionals, you have a cultural knowledge that if you're just translating, that cultural knowledge adds so much. And I think we kind of sell ourselves short if we just stick with, here's translation in, translation out. Mm-hmm. So adding a marketing layer, a contextual layer, a culture layer, separates a language worker from other language workers and from AI.
You know, this is very interesting. Why? Is because most of the conversation that's taking place right now in the industry is around creating value. In fact, I run an AI exchange networking group. We meet every Friday at 9 o'clock in the morning. And every conversation we've had, that's a global group, is around how do we create value in today's world? Tools and everything else is easy to come by. You can learn a new skills. You can learn to program. You can learn to design. Whatever you have in mind, you can adapt and learn it. But to bring value through all this process and make that value quantifiable, people to see it as a necessary thing that they're willing to pay for, it's very interesting nowadays. Everybody is searching for that. It doesn't matter what industry we're in. Everybody's searching for that. Where is my value? How do I re-quantify my value to the audience, to the people out there, that they're supposedly your prospects, your customers down the road, right?
Yes.
Now, for you to have been throughout all this and you've been laid off 7 times and to say, okay, I've had enough. I want to create my own thing. I want to call the shots on this thing. And I want to build something that I see a potential value down the road. That's quite significant. So how did you feel going through all these layoffs? And, you know, they must have noticed that there is a pattern here. I got to break the pattern.
You know, being laid off is frustrating. It's frustrating because usually you're giving your best effort. Either it's, so in 2000 and 2009, those were both related to the Great Recession, right? So that was, it was happening to everybody. We're all in the same boat. Okay, fine. Figure out how to solve. The layoffs that come due to mergers and acquisitions are a little bit harder to get through because they're very much company focused and not your work. Right?
Realignment, basically. They say, oh, we have 2 HR department, 2 project management department, 2 finance departments. They're going to blend them into one. We don't need all these people.
Correct. And then it rolls down in really weird ways. And it's not you, it's the company, but still you have to kind of fight through that. I found that refocusing on my particular constellation of talents and pulling lessons from the work that I did can help me repackage and restate my value to potential clients. You know, now that I've shifted very specifically to small and medium sized businesses. So you have to understand what they need and how you can bring them value. One of the pitches that I am doing is for U.S. small and medium-sized businesses to talk to English-speaking businesses about adding Spanish to their website. A lot of times they're going to be like, what? Why? Well, surprisingly enough,
not everyone speaks English.
15% of the U.S. speaks English.
You mean Spanish.
Here in Las Vegas, 30% of Las Vegas speak Spanish. People are 85% more likely to buy if you present information in their native language.
Correct. Absolutely.
I think we've all seen that study or that ad, one or the other.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? You bring a very valid point, because over the years, and I've been laid off, finished my work. We came to an arrangement, I guess, more than a layoff with Lionbridge. I used to work with Lionbridge for 25 years, I think. And I left in November, last November, just 2025, end of the year. And, you know, I just had to go through all this thought process that anybody would go through them. I'm sure you went through them as well. What do I do next? And for now, I've decided to start my own company doing consulting and hopefully create value in the expertise that I've gained over the many years in the industry and try to bring that to somebody that could use it. And so you're right. And I had a meeting like not too long ago, and I was attending a conference, and people were talking about, those are people who has product to market, take it out to market globally. If you're talking about specifically for the US, you've got many reasons why you need to take your sites into multilingual, but there are still people out there. The point I was trying to make is there are still people out there, many of them. They would say, well, my customer speaks English. Why do I have to translate? Speaks English. Or understand English. Why do I have to translate? Like you, I understand I speak three languages fluently, and I can tell you that not all of them are on the same level of strength, obviously. Not all the languages I speak are on the same level of strength for the many reasons. Why is probably I don't practice, you know, two of the other languages on a daily basis, so therefore I'm not as strong in them. But when somebody says to me, I'm going to, you know, put the label or instruction in multiple languages, at least from my point of view, now I look at this, you know, product, or I look at this company that's trying to market a product in a different light. They invested, they respected, they look at their customers a little different. Literally, I was talking to a manufacturer here in Western Ontario, in the province where I live in Canada, and I thought there would be good potential for a translation services. That's before I left the company. And they would, and I know they were exporting to like 30, 40 different countries. And so I reached out, I said, you may want to take your website into a different language. No, they understand English. This is so backward thinking, it's not even funny.
There's a difference between understanding English and aligning your content with your clients' pain points in their particular culture and language.
And the fact that I understand a language does not mean they're proficient at it. I understand Greek, for instance. I can order beer in Greek, but I don't ask me to read a manual in Greek. I have no idea what I'm reading. It just doesn't make any sense anymore. When people say, oh, you know, they understand English, what does that mean? They say hello in English? What is that?
It's crazy that sometimes companies spend so much time, effort, and money on designing the perfect marketing funnel in English and then expecting that to work on other cultures.
Yeah.
Because it's in English. Well, everybody knows English. Well, no, they don't. And if they do, I shop at the supermercado very often, right? Mm. So the Mexican grocery store. The Mexican grocery store customer is different than a customer from Walmart, and it's different than a customer from your Albertsons, Vons, Pavilions, whatever that store is called in your local area. And the service that they request, the products that they request are different. So if you are a butcher, you mm-hmm. are supplying meat, how do you get a Spanish-speaking consumer to choose your meat product instead of somebody else's? If you're selling tortilla chips, how do you sell tortilla chips to a English-speaking demographic versus a Spanish-speaking demographic? There's different customer needs. And we as language and culture professionals can help try to explain that. Hey, American, white, that's probably not the right term. I'm sorry. That's English speaking customers have a certain perception of tortilla chips. Spanish speaking customers have a different perception of tortilla chips. They're very, very close, but you can build that into how you market your tortilla chips and use different references and the whole cultural context around it. That's the key that I think we as language professionals, that's what we can bring and say, hey, we can talk about tortilla chips in a quinceañera instead of tortilla chips at the Super Bowl.
Is this making a difference? Is it making a difference in your conversation? Do you feel like the business is changing? Do you feel like some businesses are waking up? Or because I would imagine that there are some businesses say, hey, you're asking me to expand my market to a Spanish speaking. I don't want to. And they're probably happy, you know, just serving the group of customers that they're in. There must be some businesses out there when you tell them part of your growth journey, and I've had this conversation many times, you may want to expand to other markets. You may want to launch in a different demographics. Say, why would I do that? I'm happy. It's just some people are, and not everybody, obviously.
Business owners that I talk to, they see queries come in. I work with a veterinarian in the Georgia suburbs. You wouldn't think necessarily from the demographics, it's a high Spanish language area, but she has a chat box on her website and she gets Spanish language queries. So the demand is there. She's already seeing it. The question is, how do I, as somebody who doesn't speak Spanish, how do I close the loop for a service where I do have to talk to the customer, right? This isn't that I'm shipping a t-shirt, I'm treating their pet. So how do we bridge that last gap? And I think for small and medium-sized businesses, if you can't hire a Spanish-speaking person, for me, that's the first thing. Do you have a vet tech for a doctor's office? Do you have a PA, a nurse for a lawyer's office? What about paralegal that speaks Spanish? So that maybe the fully credentialed professional, maybe they don't speak it, but they have somebody on the team who does. And that way you can get that full customer service part. But if you don't, those translation apps that are available now for instances like this, where you can't hire a translator for a veterinary appointment, that's where I see the apps helping small businesses. We as language professionals can prep and do the website work. We can do knowledge base work. So if you think about like the chat boxes that come up, sometimes they're AI generated, sometimes it's a knowledge base. So we're writing those questions, we're writing the answers. All of that can power the in-person conversations that small and medium business owners and individual professionals can use to explain what's going on to their clients. And it can be that last bit that bridges the gap. Correct. So like, those are the kinds of conversations I'm having with clients is, well, Spanish sounds great. I'd love to serve these Spanish customers, but I'm scared. I'm scared that I won't be able to serve them the way that I serve my English speaking clients.
But I've had this conversation many times and I keep telling customers, you know, you can't boil the ocean. You got to start somewhere. And yeah, you mean to get to perfection is a long journey, but at least you're trying, you're attempting. And there's a respect for that. There is a huge respect for that. If you're ignoring it, that means you're sending a different image to the outside world. You don't care, you're racist, whatever the heck it is. People put labels on people nowadays. It's easy. You go on TikTok and see it. But the question is, if you're trying, if you're attempting, if you're making that little bit of an effort, and in the grand scheme of things, you know, when people think about translation, and I'm sure you agree with that, you've talked to customers as much as I did. Most customers initially, on the initial thought of translation, they think it's a huge investment. It is not. It's peanuts in comparison to what you've spent already on developing your product. Have you had those situations?
Bit. I've always had a few different ways of how do we get around the, this sounds big, it sounds scary, it sounds like a big investment. Well, I always recommend start with just one. If you need to, start with a simple pilot project. Maybe we don't translate the whole website. Maybe we create a landing page that goes to like a specific ad that goes to one landing page that goes to one specific person in your organization who handles all the Spanish language queries. So you have a really small investment. It's the same investment as if you would do any other marketing campaign in English. It just happens to be in Spanish, because then all of the other bits take up as much or more than the content creation budget, which is translation then falls under a content creation budget, not a translation budget.
Correct.
So when cost is an issue, I try to make the scope small. When trust is an issue.
Somewhere, basically.
Yeah, I think trust is an issue more than as much as or more than cost of how do I know that this customer really wants what I'm selling and that my points have come across and that I can close the deal. So correct. I think we as language workers have to build that trust for our clients. If they trust us, they'll trust the work that we do. And then when they see the clients come in and convert, the trust is proven. And then they can breathe that sigh of relief that, okay, yes, this investment worked.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, you got to dip your toes in the water, basically. Try it a little bit and see where it gets you. Now, there is a study out there, a glot study that you cite frequently. There is 85% of the people out there prefer to purchase in their own or in their first language. And by the way, for the audience, what we mean by first language is the language that you were born with, that you grew up learning from your parents at home, That's what we call the first language. And for skeptical out there who are in the small to medium business owners right now, Christina, who thinks English site is doing enough, what does the number actually mean, that 85%? What does it mean to them?
Get to that usually later in the conversation, right? I start with, hey, we have a significant population that doesn't speak English or speaks English as a secondary language. Right. You want to get in with these people. Okay, yes. Okay, 85% prefer to purchase in their first language. Great. How do we do that? And then we talk about translation and speccing out. I'm sorry, I lost the train of thought.
Okay, no worries.
I noticed while I was answering, I'm like, wait a second.
Conversation. That's why we're having coffee. Don't worry about it. Continue if you want to. If you, you know, when a customer or small to medium business, you tell them that, look, 85% of the people out there, they prefer to buy in their own language, in their first language, which happened to me many times, it's not English. And there must be an ROI in their mind as they see this, they see maybe that's a good opportunity here. Maybe they buy more, maybe they come back and buy. I don't know. Maybe you create a returning customer out of these people. I have no clue. But the fact that there are 85% of the population walking around in neighborhood and cities or across North America, they prefer to buy in their first language. And many of those first 85%, English is not their first language. They understand it correctly, but it's not comfortable for them to execute a purchase. And maybe there is a correlation. I don't know. How many shopping carts out there, they go ignored? They buy something, they drop it in the shopping cart, they exit without executing the purchase. Again, maybe it's connected, maybe it's not. I don't know. But what I'm saying is, to complete the purchase with confidence, they prefer it in their first language. And that's what I was going with this question.
Yeah, yeah. It's something that I find really interesting. I'm not working with a lot of e-commerce brands right now. Getting folks to understand cart completion is kind of its own thing.
it's another agenda altogether.
You know, people are like, I'm an insurance agent. Nobody completes a cart, right? They call me. Okay, great.
I got it.
My veterinarian client, they book online, but the payment doesn't happen until they've actually seen the animal and all that. So it's still, for the customers that I'm talking to, it's something that comes into play really further on in the sales conversation instead of early in the sales conversation. So, but I do think it's a very helpful metric for customers to realize that I can increase the closure rate. It also highlights that the search bits of things. I use it as a way to get into a kind of search in languages that are not English. Mm-hmm. Often is smaller but less competitive. Mm. An investment into non-English content can go a lot further than an investment into English content. I kind of use it to get into that discussion sometimes.
Now, for the audience, you know, Christina, bring a very good topic here, having your content in both languages or many languages for that matter. Even if you're a consultant or if you're a small entrepreneur in your mind, you may not think, I don't have a lot of visibility, but trust me, you do. An example, for instance, my LinkedIn profile, my personal LinkedIn profile in both languages, English and Spanish. And probably I should add another language in there, but at this point, I don't have the time to manage three languages or four languages on that thing. But for now, all that personal personal information that you put out there, be it your LinkedIn profile, I'm not talking about your social insurance number, I'm talking about your LinkedIn profile, and I'm talking about all the other bits and pieces of information about yourself, Instagram, etc. You know, if you do this in multiple languages, again, whatever your purpose is for that content, it's about outcome here, right? And you took the example earlier, you made the example earlier about an insurance agent. Insurance agent may not have a shopping cart, but there's a CTA on every website. Every website has a call to action. And that call to action, if people don't understand what that is, it means I want you to do something after you visit my website. Book a meeting, buy a product, send me an email. Those are engagements that we're asking somebody to do. They need to feel comfortable doing them. And the only way they're going to be feeling comfortable to do it, if they are reading in their own language, then where this falls short in many cases, specifically on the SMB side. That's small to medium businesses. Now, I have a question in which the audience probably is dying to find out a little bit more. And I wanted to get to know deep into the conversation of multilingual and how people should go into multilingual marketing before we get into get to know, for instance, your company, if you don't mind, Christina. Manzanita Marketing, what does it do? What is it about? And if you don't mind explaining it to the audience.
Sure. Manzanita Marketing is a digital marketing agency that focuses on multilingual and international, specifically search engine optimization. But to get to SEO, you need to have content. You need to understand the culture. So we walk through the whole process, market research, ideal client profile optimization in the culture that you're targeting, then keyword research, then content creation, then deployment. So we focus on French, English, and French, German, and Spanish. We start in English. We actually market to German-speaking and French-speaking companies as well to improve and Americanize their outreach if that's needed. Sometimes European companies will optimize for UK English first, or they'll translate because they've learned English in school and you get a very German-influenced or French-influenced translation on the website. So they'll come to me and I'll refine that into American English instead of Jurlish usually. So those are the two ways that we help small businesses. We help U.S. small businesses target Spanish language in the U.S. We help U.S. small businesses expand into Europe. We help European businesses market themselves in the U.S. better.
Okay. And who is your primary customer? Who do you target?
Small and medium-sized businesses, as mentioned. I'm a small or small operator.
Any specific industry, Christina, or do you want
to? We've done a few insurance ones. Mm-hmm. And we have an expertise in gambling, but that's not something I'm actually focus
You're
on
Vegas,
marketing.
Yeah.
That's very complicated.
You can't escape that. You're in Vegas.
I've gotten into beauty recently, some food, restaurants, you know.
People getting into that, I know you mentioned SEO, but are people in your circles are trying to get into Geo, for instance, the, what do you call it, generative engine optimization?
If they're not asking me about it, I'm already proactively thinking about it for them on their behalf.
Okay. Because I'm thinking there's a lot of, I mean, based on everything I read, I'm thinking there's a shift here from SEO to Geo, and that's the, you know, predominantly pushed by the exceptional spike in usage of AI and AI models, I guess.
Yeah. So from a search perspective, we haven't broken Google's monopoly on how people find information.
People
are still using Google to search for things. They are also using social media to search for things. They're also using AI to search for things. So other industries are making inroads on Google's search monopoly. Most companies that I talk to are aware that social media is a thing that they should be doing. And they understand that AI is a thing that is happening, but they're not sure how it impacts their business from the outside coming in. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they're looking at how do I use AI to optimize my own internal processes. That's not what I help with.
Yeah, I
know people will help with that, but that's not my, like, I cannot, that's not something where I'm going
AI
to be.
AI cannot fix your broken process. That's period.
It's not that these processes are always broken. Sometimes they are, but they just want to help optimize and streamline.
The biggest thing is right now with these processes, I don't know if you find them, you find the exact same thing, or maybe not. I have no idea. We were just talking about it. They just did the presentation on it. And I think this one you should attend if you have time, that AI exchange at 9 o'clock on Fridays. And I make the mention here that not necessarily your processes are broken, but there are technologies out there that you can use that has to basically... It forces you almost to rethink how you process things. Not because you're doing anything wrong now, but could you do it differently with the injection of the new technologies? Just to overlay technology on top of process, not sure how much help that is. And people are sometimes, they're backing away from it because, hey, we tried it, it didn't work. How many times have you heard it? We try to use AI, but, you know, it didn't do anything for us. But if you overlay it on top of existing thing that you tried many years, you've been working at it for many years, it's not going to do anything. It actually amplifies the bad things.
I see AI as a way to eliminate busy work. Okay, I have to email these 5 to 10 prospects. I have to research prospects. I have to email them. That part of the process for me is onerous busy work. If I can have AI process, research and process and say, hey, here's the 5 prospects. And I say, this is my template. Let's adjust here, here, and here for this one, and here, here, and here for that one. It expedites the process. Mm-hmm. So that's where I see AI helping, but I feel like decisions have to be made by human beings.
You know, I know when I did the research on you and your company, Christina, you compared AI content wave to panda and penguin era keyword stuffing in a new clothes. I love that. I thought I had to ask you about this one. What did you mean by that?
So I started in SEO in 2009 with TextBroker. They were a content creation company. And in the SEO industry at the time, we were shifting from like that early phase of people trying to game Google's algorithm with like 3-point font text, white text on a white background, your keyword meta tag stuffed with all these keywords, like that kind of poor tactics.
We don't have a value yet.
Google implemented a whole bunch of updates. Mm-hmm. And then there was like article spinning, which was a very early predecessor of predictive generative text. And there was a whole bunch of low quality content being created, and Google was implementing guidelines to lower the value of low quality content. Mm-hmm. So now we have AI, right? And AI can write a lot of content really quickly. And we're also hearing from Google in the past few weeks, if not the past month, hey, your evergreen content, your standard how-tos, your here's what a shingle roof is, all of that content that everybody can create is not adding value anymore. So now we need the personal experiences of your roofer and plumber. We need the personal experiences of your customers. We need the unique insight that the business owner can bring, that a professional can bring, that will create the difference between the swamp of AI-generated content.
Correct.
So for language professionals, this is our turn to shine.
Yeah. You mentioned like in one of your views is quality content in 2026 is weird now. I mean, you got to, as you were mentioning earlier, because there's a swamp out there of content that is, I don't know how it got generated, by press of a button, maybe by, you know, going back into, you know, people who are producing content in English that probably it's not their language. English is not their language. They're just pressing a button on something and they're publishing something out there. They don't know what they're talking about, or they don't understand it. And you and one of the things that you have is a great line, which I really liked, is maybe you're the only one who actually mentions a price and you win. What does that idea mean and how localization teams now should think about translated content going forward?
So I'm so glad that you're listening to my other podcast. Thank you. With AI search, the way AI search works is it looks at content that's been created and says, what is the same? And then where can I get more detail? So if you are the content creator that provides the extra detail, that can be the thing to elevate your content out of the swamp. And it doesn't always have to be price. It could be that you mention materials that are used in construction of a physical product, that you pull back the curtain on the process you use for proofreading in a linguistic context, right? Like the secret sauce, what AI is forcing us to do a lot of times is reveal some of that secret sauce.
That's the value that everybody's searching for.
Yeah.
It's so, that expertise, basically, the know-how.
That's it.
Absolutely.
It's that unique thing that you bring to the table, that your company brings to the table, that your product brings to the table, and then expressed in a way that hasn't been run smooth. Uh-huh. And processed within an inch of its life. I think real and authentic content is going to win more and more.
Now, listening to this conversation, you and I dialoguing on this one, it's pretty interesting because, again, people don't want to listen or hear or read cliches anymore. It's all boilerplates out there. It's all boilerplates. Like everything looks the same. And every website looks like the second website. You know, I was just talking to a web designer, built, you know, a small company, N49 Networks is my own consulting company I created. And somebody says to me, you have to put a video on your website, on a front page. I said, okay. So I went to my website. I pulled a video and I put it on a page. I looked around, everybody doing the same. I said, What's the difference? If everybody's going to do the same, why did I do it? Maybe I should have left it static image. The point is, everybody is copying everybody because everybody's chasing that shiny object out there that is created some magical way. And AI is part of the magical way, I guess, people creating things and thinking that this is going to be the solution to all my problems. You know, I create that kick-ass website, it's going to solve my revenue issues. Well, not necessarily, but I don't know how you're going to create, how you solve your revenue issue by creating a website. It helps a little bit to have a good website. Nobody's discussing that. But if you do it wrong, if you create it with unauthentic content, obviously it's not going to lead to anything. It's just paperweight, digital paperweight.
True.
So how do you think about this whole SEO workflow right now in the presence of tools like DeepL and, you know, all the other tools out there that they're, you know, I think they're all consistently falling short, in my opinion. What do I know? I'm just a podcaster at this point. I used to have an opinion. No, I'm just kidding. What do you think of those tools in relation to DeepL and, to SEO?
I think they're a launch pad. So for small businesses, medium-sized businesses that don't have a budget and want to start and try, this is one way for them to affordably get into non-English language markets or non-primary language markets.
So basically you're saying, are we saying that good enough is okay at the beginning?
Well, I always prefer to have a human in the loop. And there are really cost-efficient ways to have first language speakers look at those AI-generated translations. Whether you say, hey, I need a proofreading for, you know, a really limited budget. Or when you're looking at local variations, if you go to your local college or university and say, hey, can we run a project for your students to review this? Or can we have students create this? Leveraging students, doing internships. I'm a huge fan of internships. An internship got me into Europe. Always, always pro internship. But leveraging students, college level students, to review translated content, as long as they are first language speakers or local speakers, can be a great way for businesses to get that local flavor in the right cultural context, encourage local students to stay in town and give them work experience. Everybody wins. The business wins, the student wins, consumers win because businesses work with a local student to cater to the local culture.
So, you know, I live in Canada, and that's quite the discussion now, debate that's going on when students finish their career in universities and they want to jump onto different, you know, find a job and start their life and, you know, et cetera. And economically, they're not staying in Canada. They're moving outside the country to get better job, better pay. And I think on a micro scale, at a city scale, that makes sense too. Because if they go to university in your city, you want them to stay in university, you stay in your city. You taught them there, you spent money on them. Economically, you spent money on raising them in that part of the country. And you want them to stick around. That's better investment. Of course, the fluidity of demographics in and out of certain jurisdiction eventually will balance itself out. But who knows more about your, other than the people that they grew up in, brought up in it and studied in it and graduated in it. And I know, you know, every bits about it. So it makes more sense on various levels to keep these people in and make sure that these people stay around.
Absolutely. I mean, for Canadian businesses, I know at some point there's a regulation that you have to have your stuff in French. You have to have it in Quebecois, right? So why not, instead of making fun of the Quebecois, why not reach out to, you know, universities and say, hey, can we do a partnership? Can you have your language sections work with us on these projects?
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I've seen like some customers that they're not from Canada, for instance. Canada, I think we've got it under control in terms of most businesses who are, by the way, the Quebec market represents about 33% of the Canadian market in general from an economy perspective. And anybody who is generally interested in entering the Canadian market probably don't want to ignore that 30% or 33% of the market that sits, that speaks different language. I mean, again, the cost of doing business, part of that. So you can't say, I want to open a chain of retail in Ontario and there's a 30% of the country who speaks French on the other side and say, oh, I'm not going to do that. Well, why not? Well, I don't like their money or something. I don't know. It can't be for translating, because translating is not going to cost you that much money. It is operating in a different language. like anybody else. And, you know, there's a thriving economy in Quebec. You should be part of it. And to be part of it, you need to translate. And if you don't believe me, ask Bill 96. I did a lot of, I did the Bill 96 that was passed last couple of years ago, and it became in effect in 2025. You know, it asks, it's an upgrade for Bill 101, which also regulate how you communicate in Quebec. Bill 96 is a bit of an upgrade. And that is now there's auditing. Now there's auditors from the government, if you translated or not. And how did you translate? The font size, the placement of the language, English, French first, English after. And your internal, like you might think, oh, I've got like an HR platform. You know, only my team who speaks English looks at it. Well, here's the breaking news for you. You need to translate the HR platform into French. And they will visit your office, the auditors will, and they will unpack all this, and they will give you a report, and you have time to, they give you a bit of a time to adjust all this. And if you don't adjust it, there's penalties, and these penalties are severe, financial penalties. And as long as you're on offside of the law, basically, these penalties keep coming until you correct it. Ugh. So here's a community who is French community, who lives in North America, which is predominantly English, mm-hmm. trying to protect their language the best way they know, which I don't blame them. And there are many other demographics. Here's the question that I always ask. I mean, there are many demographics out here that we know they blended into the culture here and they forgot their own language. I mean, I don't have to name them. Italian, Spanish, Middle Easterns, wherever they come from.
First Nations.
Everybody at least should preserve their own language, right? And keep it. I've seen people like who come to this country, they speak one language, their kids don't speak it anymore. So what happened? We sent up to school. Okay. What's the big deal? Learn another language. Now, here's one for you. The LSP is often the language service providers for the audience. They deliver beautifully translated content and hand it back to the client without anyone asking whether it's actually rank. Did it do what it's supposed to do? We sort of drive it out there, drop it at the back porch of the customer, figuratively speaking, and that's it. Our job is done. I delivered it. We don't know what happened after that. Is there a step missing in there, in your opinion?
Yes. So writing for SEO is a little different than just writing content. Keywords aren't as important anymore, but it's one of those things that can make a major difference when you're starting to spec out your project. The same way that you would spec out what level of formality you want your language in, you know, are we doing formal Spanish or informal Spanish, formal German or informal German? I think almost everything except English has different levels of formality, right? So you spec that out in advance. You spec out, you know, your ideal client profile. Hopefully you're getting some of this information. You know, we're talking to car owners because it's a car manual, or we're talking to people who are looking for nutritional advice because we're a nutritional supplement company. Hopefully you're getting some of that background. One thing that I think if we're doing an SEO play is that the keyword should be defined. Mm-hmm. This particular piece, what is it on? It's on cell phones. Okay. What term should we be using for cell phone? In Germany, you have cell phone, the translation, but you also have a phrase called Handy. A German will probably translate with the phrase Handy. But if the strategist from the company side has done their research and they see that actually Mobiltelefon has more search volume than Handy in this instance, then we can say, hey, please translate 95 or 75% of the time with Mobiltelefon mm-hmm. and the rest with Handy. Or vice versa. Or sometimes the English term is adapted. For German, a lot of marketing terminology retains the original English. French, it is way less likely that you're retaining an English word, that you're borrowing an English word. They'll make up a French word for your English concept.
So this is a lot more expertise, in-depth expertise in terms of trying to select the SEO keywords versus somebody running Google Analytics and try to figure out, oh, what the hits are today and try to figure out on that topic. You know, here's what Google Analytics are saying. I'm going to collect these words. I'm going to embed it into my text. And Bob's your uncle. Job is done. It's more than that. It takes a lot of in-depth research. This is the quick and easy way to do it if you want to do it through analytics. But if you want to get it done right, basically, you need to actually do some research on it. And that's what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah. So the value add that I'm trying to present to clients is research your target client in their locality first, right? If you're selling a thing, you're selling a suite of features and benefits, are those features and benefits the same? The features are the same. The product is what it is. But are the benefits the same? And are they solving the problems that your customer is having no matter what culture or country they're in.
It's less likely, but you need to know.
You need to know. So,
because the problem you're solving for in the U.S. probably not the same problem you're solving for in Germany.
Yes. And even within the U.S. or within Canada, you have cultural differences of 100%. How you use a specific product.
100%.
So if we can research the cultural and linguistic instance where the product's being used, then we can say, hey, we're using this product in Germany. Efficiency is much more important in Germany than it is in the U.S. We should adapt our content to talk more about efficiency than we currently do. So then all of a sudden, it's not just a translation question. Mm-hmm. It's a transcreation question.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
It's how do we express this feature of the product in a way that will be even more relevant to that target consumer.
What do you think of the idea, Christina, of instead of transforming the content, taking it from one language, putting it into another, just create the content in the target language? Don't translate it.
Love it, because I've done a little bit of software as a service type stuff, right? And in that case, you're looking at systems. Sometimes you're getting involved with organizations. You have standards. The organizations and standards can be different from country to country. So if you're transcreating, you write your brief in English, you send it to your language professional, they write in the target language, they're going to naturally pull in the references that make sense for that culture or language or cultural language pairing. And I worked at a organization, they were translating everything, but they were translating into areas that I'm like, okay, yes, this is fine. This is fine. This is fine. How to play blackjack. Yes, we can translate that. The rules of blackjack don't change from country to country, but the games that you play and the strategies you use change. And it was a gambling website. Sports betting was a big topic.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, in the U.S., it's all about football, right?
Yeah.
But in almost every other country, what's the sport?
Soccer.
Football, but not American football.
Different football.
So if all of your content around sports betting is American football-centric, if you talk about Lions versus Packers, if you talk about field goals and touchdowns, translating doesn't adapt the content to the culture. You're still talking about Lions versus Packers and touchdowns. So you lose the interest of your reader. But if you send a brief to a writer in Spain, a brief to a writer in Germany, and a brief to a writer in Colombia, you're going to get references to the beautiful sport of soccer or football, but the teams they pick are going to be different.
100%.
Right? Your German writer is going to say Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Leverkusen, but your Spanish writer is going to say Barcelona, and your Colombian writer is going to name Colombian teams. All of a sudden, your content gets incredibly interesting for your readers, because you are tapping into local knowledge and local institutions
100%.
That people are like, yeah, FC Barcelona!
You're engaging emotions at a local level. That's what you want. You
100%.
Know, very interesting. I'm going to, after the call, what I'll do is I'll make a few introduction for you for content, how do you say, multilingual content writers in language directly. And there's a good friend of mine. She lives in Malaga in Spain. Malaga? Yeah, she's in Malaga, Spain. And
fantastic.
She owns a small company. I'll introduce you to her. She's pretty good. Is there any, we're coming up on the hour here. I want to make sure that we've addressed everything that you want to address before we wrap it up. What do you think so far for the conversation? And have I covered everything that you wanted to
cover? We've covered a lot. I hope that I've added value for language professionals. A lot of the other podcasts that I've done have been focused on like marketing, small, medium businesses, things like that. So
this is a well-rounded conversation, I think.
I'm already preaching to the choir a little bit. I don't have to tell you that it's important to translate your content. Now the question is kind of flipped on its head. How do we as language professionals talk to customers? How do we provide value? And how do we get the people that we're talking to recognize the benefit that localized content can have for their business? I think that's all of our challenge.
100%. Creating value. Where do we create value as a human professionals in the industry? And where is that value is going to shine for our customers? And contrary to common belief, and I think I'm speaking on behalf of the industry when I say this, when Tech Valley in Silicon Valley thinks that language problem is solved. I've got a breaking news for you. It isn't. From the Babylonians till now, people have been trying to solve it. Unless you have some magic potion, you can get people to drink and all of a sudden they're understanding and speaking a few hundred languages all at the same time. Not sure what that's going to look like, but I got up news for you. It is not solved. We're making advancement. We're making improvement, but we're not there yet. And I don't think we ever will, because there is no mathematical formula that's going to take a human history, tradition, emotion, and encapsulate that into one mathematical formula, whatever that mathematical formula is. That's far from being. We're human beings. We're not machines yet. We're not going there eventually soon. But here it is. We are where we are. Christina, look. This has been an eye-opening conversation, I think, for me.
Well, Robin, thank you so much. It's so nice to talk to people who get it.
I really appreciate
your conversation can be about how do we do this better? How do we talk to businesses? How do we talk to business owners? How do we get the message out? I'm so glad that we're having the conversation.
Same here. I really appreciate your time with me. Thank you so much, Christina, for this particular episode that you helped record with me. Thanks so much for showing up here on the podcast. I really appreciate your time. And if you ever want to come back in the future for an update, I would love for you to come back and share news for us, hopefully successful news for your organization, Manzanita Marketing. And for the audience, thanks so much for listening in. If you're coming on our podcast channels, thanks for your downloads. I really appreciate it. 6 months in now on this new platform of downloading, and we're almost 150,000 downloads in 6 months. So thanks so much for your trust in the channel. We're averaging about 1,200 downloads a day. I couldn't have imagined this, to be honest with you. I started a coffee conversation for this chat, and here we are. And if you're coming on YouTube, thanks for watching us. And if you're downloading our blog post and reading your blog post on robinayoub.blog, where I summarize these conversations into a blog, and here's my AI camera now screwing things up for me at the last minute. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. And you guys, I'll see you at the next episode. Christina, hang on for a second. Wait for the upload. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Robin.